You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
With me is George Cheveley, Portfolio Manager in the Global Natural Resources Strategy at 91 in London. Now, George, I'm going to throw some numbers at you here. Since the beginning of 2024, the Commodity Research Bureau Index, which, as we know, is an index which contains just about every significantly traded commodity in the world across the board, it's risen 13.5%. It's at around about a 343 level as an index. Its high was in July 2008 when it touched 470 as an index, and I think that was to do with China, but it really is showing significant signs of life. What's driving the commodities and resources at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think in many ways we are seeing sort of early signs of a recovery generally. If you look at the PMI indicators globally, I mean, we've seen them bottom and we're seeing them picking up, including Europe itself as well. And so I think we're starting to see some signs of a recovery. And despite all the concerns around China and the slowdown in the property sector there, which is clearly real and happening, we've still seen actually pretty good demand, particularly on the metal side, because they're pushing, you know, money into infrastructure, renewable energy, etc. So, you know, demand has actually held up pretty well. We're seeing an end to the destock that we've seen in Europe and the States, and prospects are picking up. And if you look, you know, oil, we've seen prices rally this year as activities improved and OPEC have held supply down. Metals we're seeing also improve again, demand okay and supply constrained. And then, of course, even on the soft side, we've seen a breakout in cocoa because of supply problems in West Africa. So across the commodity complex, we're seeing prices break out. And of course, last but not least, gold at record highs.
Yes, we'll certainly speak about gold in a little bit more detail later on. But if you look at the macroeconomic factors and monetary factors as well, it seems that although there's been a little bit of a delay or a potential delay and a little bit of a wobble from certain risk asset classes because they only think it'll have an interest rate cut from the United States in June, maybe even further on from that. But is that one of the factors as well? At lower interest rates, it causes a spurt in economies and the US dollar weakens.
Yeah, I mean, certainly people are, you know, and clearly one of the factors is the expectation that the Fed has peaked and we're going to see cuts coming this year. I mean, arguably that's been, you know, talk of the market now for 6 months or more.
Yes.
And when they come is, you know, we still don't know, and maybe they get delayed. But in a sense, you know, the market, all that happens is the market will expect them later. So, you know, they are coming. When exactly they come doesn't matter. I think what's more important now on the commodity side is, you know, the destocking that we've seen over the last 2 years in Europe and the States, which was a double destock because we had just in case inventories built up because of logistics issues due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, etc., and the after effects of COVID. So we destocked that stock. And then last year we destocked again because interest rates were rising and financial officers are saying we can't afford to hold this stock, our working capital is too high. So we've had an extended period of destocking in the Western world, which is now all the signals are saying is coming to an end. And of course, if you stop destocking, demand improves. So, you know, short term, we're seeing demand indicators move up. And as I say, China, which is in a different part of the cycle, is, you know, maybe not as strong as it has been in the past, but it's not, well, there's no signs yet of it, you know, completely weakening. There are weak sectors like property, but overall demand has remained okay.
So there's been inventory drawdown in Europe and the United States. And of course, those inventories have to be replenished.
Yeah, so we're now looking at activity picking up with very low inventories. And clearly, that then makes these markets very susceptible. And we mustn't forget, at the same time, we've seen supply constraints, you know, notably in markets like copper, where we've had, you know, mine closed in Panama and cutbacks in Chile for various reasons. You know, we've lost probably 1 million tons of supply this year in the copper market. And that's a market which totals around 25 million. So a significant loss of supply this year, which has happened over the past 6 months. And that combined then with an end of destocking clearly sets these markets up for much stronger performance.
George, is there any particular sector within the commodity world that you favour, or sectors?
There's a number. I mean, we've been pretty bullish on copper, as you might have gathered already.
Yes.
After the supply cuts we've seen, and obviously we're seeing prices have moved up quite substantially. Actually, we're still pretty bullish on aluminium as well, partly because it's the obvious substitute if copper gets tight, and partly because China is now up against its capacity limit imposed by the government a couple of years ago. So we don't see a big increase in production there, but we see demand recovering, of course. Elsewhere, you know, we've enjoyed and see very good performance from oil refiners who have really enjoyed, you know, very high margins now for a while. And the market's been expecting that to revert to the mean. But the fact is there is very little incentive for new capacity to be built in many parts of the world because of long-term worries about oil demand. And at the same time, then we've had short-term disruption with Ukrainian attacks on Russian oil refineries, which has disrupted supply in the short term. So, you know, again, a combination there, which has made oil refining and crack spreads as their margin are very strong this year, and continue to see that. The other interesting one is obviously gold. We've been overweight there. I think that is more the market is looking at interest rate cuts, but is also looking at the size of debt levels in the US. And actually, if rates cut, an expectation that the dollar weakens, and that is clearly also driving gold. Interestingly, we've seen in the last week silver break out. It's just got above $26, $27, which has been a ceiling now for about 3 or 4 years. And actually, that looks quite interesting. And the interesting thing there is it's not just gold driving that. It's also very high industrial demand from photovoltaics, particularly in China, where we saw demand for silver in China rise about 50% last year, just from photovoltaics.
Let's talk about gold a little bit more. I know you've been very bullish of it for quite a while now, and you've been right in your strategy. But I get the impression that, for example, we're approaching $2,300 an ounce, which will be a record. And I get the impression that there might be a lot of option hedge strategies in place at these big levels, you know, $2,200, $2,300. And people have to cover. The Treasury departments of gold producers will be saying, OK, we've got to cover these things now, otherwise we're in trouble. Could that be a contributory factor?
To be honest, you know, if you look at hedging amongst gold miners, it's nothing compared to 20 years ago when they got into a lot of trouble in the last bull cycle where they, you know, they had 2 or 3 years of hedges. And as costs went up, they suddenly had unprofitable hedges, which they had to buy back. And rising prices can cause that problem. But if you look at the amount of gold that's hedged by producers, it's a fraction of that. It's something like 10 to 15% of a year's supply, whereas it used to be over 100%. So it's actually a lot of gold producers are much more exposed to spot price and therefore, you know, in a much better situation. I think what's interesting about this, we're talking about record gold prices in nominal terms, I must add. In real terms, we're not there yet. But if you look at those prices, it's not that we've had massive retail institutional participation. In fact, we've had outflows from the ETFs, the gold ETFs, since the peak in 2020 during COVID. They've started to bottom in the last month, but we've gone from, I think, a peak of 111 million ounces back to around 81, 82. What's been supporting the gold price and has really driven this move has been this enormous central bank buying. We've seen 2 years of over 1,000 tons a year bought by central banks, which is double the sort of average buying that we've seen over the last 10 or so. And this year has started very fast as well. And it's, you know, part of this is central banks wanting to de-dollarize and diversify at least some of their holdings away from pure dollars and treasuries.
Central banks are not all created equal, George. Who's been doing it? I mean, I keep on hearing people saying the reason the US Treasury market is suddenly under a little bit of pressure with yields rising is because the Chinese are de-dollarizing via the Treasury market and buying gold. Is that one of the factors within that central bank scenario that you've just painted?
Yeah, no. China was a big contributor to that buying, particularly last year and in the recent 12 months. And China has been, and it's not just the central bank in China. In fact, where we've seen strong retail demand is also in China, where we've seen record imports. And that's really been local Chinese. You know, they don't want to put their money into property. They're worried about the stock market that's been falling. And actually buying gold is a way to hedge against a weakening renminbi. So we've seen a lot of demand for gold as an investment in China, not just from the central bank, but also from people there as well. But actually, interestingly, we've seen a broadening of central bank buying over the last few years and generally more interest from a number of banks. And in fact, we've even seen developed world banks buying for the first time in many years. So, I mean, the Irish bank bought some a couple of years ago. We saw a reasonable chunk being bought by Singapore Central Bank last year. So we're seeing, you know, a spread of banks actually buying it as they look to diversify away from just buying treasuries.
I have to ask you about PGMs. The white metal basket has been all over the place quite recently and actually beyond as well. What do you make of that sector?
Well, I think in a way it's symptomatic of a sector where there's a lot of uncertainty. And by the way, uncertainty on both sides. So here's a sector where supply side, you've clearly got one of the major producers under sanctions in, you know, Norilsk in Russia, or at least, you know, difficulties getting metal. Now, that is going elsewhere. That's fine, but it still causes problems. Secondly, you've got a lot of uncertainty in South Africa around production, people trying to make cuts and cut costs. And you know, that always causes some disruption, as well as the well-known logistical issues that can cause disruption. And then on the other side, you know, what is long-term demand going to be for palladium and platinum when we don't know how quickly electric vehicles are going to come in and how many hybrids we're going to require? I mean, a year ago, everybody said ICE hybrids were over, we were going to electric vehicles. Today, there's a lot of pushback against that. So, you know, if you say, what is platinum and palladium demand going to be in 10 years' time? It's a very difficult question to answer. And therefore, we're seeing volatility in prices as people try to, the market essentially tries to solve a very difficult equation.
Right. Finally, what about equities? Because I was speaking to somebody who's a gold bull, I mean, a serial gold bull, and he said, well, look at the gold price having done this, and look, the equities have lagged. Is that across the board with resources, or is it gold specific? What are the prospects for equities in all sectors and the ones you really favour?
Gold has probably been one of the worst in that effect. And actually, what we've seen in resources equities, you know, yes, equities have more leverage to prices than the commodities themselves, but what equities also get exposed to is costs. And the cost increases we saw in 22 were vicious because of the invasion by Ukraine. We see oil prices jump, et cetera, and we have massive inflation. In 23, we were expecting, hoping that to subside somewhat as oil prices moderated, other input costs came down. But the problem in 23 was there were still a lot of, you know, contract prices, either labor contracts, supply contracts, which only renew every year or two. And a lot of those only priced upwards in 23. So in a way, 23 was disappointing in gold, but elsewhere as well, in terms of cost inflation, was still very evident within the resources sector generally. The interesting thing is when we saw results earlier this year, you know, if you remember, gold and even resource equities the first 2 months of this year were under a lot of pressure, partly because people were saying, I can't believe their costs. Their costs are out of control. They're not managing their costs. In fact, it was very backward looking. If you talk to companies this year and you say, how are costs looking this year? You know, oil prices might be higher and they will have an effect, but actually they're saying, no, we think we're through the worst of it. We think, you know, our costs will be reasonable this year. Inflation's coming down, etc. We're not seeing quite the pressures that we've had the last 2 years. So I think it's a very exciting time for the equities. We've got commodity prices rising. Yes, that does increase costs in terms of oil, etc. But actually, the rest of their cost, you know, issues are certainly, I think, less pressing. And also volumes are recovering because finally we're through the backlog of stripping, etc., which was built up during COVID. So we're at a very interesting point where I think the equities, and we're starting to see that, they moved a lot in the last month. People are realizing that the rise in commodity prices is pretty much going to flow straight through to the bottom line for a number of these companies. And therefore, even with the rise in equities, people point out they still look cheap, if not cheaper than they did a month ago.
George, thanks so much for your excellent analysis. George Cheveley is a portfolio manager in the Global Natural Resources Strategy at 91 in London. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.